better applause than that. I mean, they ran the hill for crying out loud over at East Fork. Yeah. Hey, I'm excited to, again, as Taylor mentioned during the announcements, we're doing this series called One Another, and next week we're wrapping it all up with Sing With One Another, and we have this incredible bluegrass folk band from the west side of town called My Brother's Keeper. These guys rock and bluegrass. They do it all. But if you had an opportunity in June to see them, if you miss them, they're phenomenal. And so I'm just telling you that because you want to pack this place out, both services. They're going to be with us at 9:30, and they're going to be here with this service as well. I'm telling you, every age, every music taste there was, love these guys. So I just, you know, you definitely want to be here for that. And we're going to sing together, and it's going to be awesome. We're wrapping up the series, as I said, witness, and talking about how basically all along we've been talking about togetherness is our greatest witness. And if you've been with us from the whole time, we started off really by talking about the idea of loving one another, forgiving one another, being hospitable with one another, serving one another, honoring one another. Last week we talked about carrying one another's burdens. And this morning I'm going to talk to you about something that, quite honestly, when it first was on the schedule about 6 months, 8 months ago, when we laid it all out, it always looks good. When you put a sermon series together and you put it on the date, it always looks good. But I'm going to be honest with you. All week this one has been tough for me because I want to talk about encouraging one another. And the reason it's been very tough for me is because when you think of all the stuff that's been going on in the world right now, just in the world, it is very discouraging. And so it's been a challenge for me to study it, to prepare it, and to preach it. It's really hard to talk about encouraging one another when there are so many people that are discouraged. And I'm just going to go ahead and say up front that I thought that was going to be a tough enough, but on Friday night, out of nowhere, nothing different. My sciatic nerve on the left side, my left buttocks, as Forrest Gump would say, has been like giving me problems. So if for some reason you see me turn around and grimace or say fiddle faddle or something like that or start writhing in pain, I'm not having a heart attack, I'm having a sciatic attack. So I just thought I'd let you know that, but I'm going to push through. But here's the reality. The reality is we live in a time that while it's great to talk about encouraging one another, it is so discouraging. I mean, just the last 3 or 4 weeks, we've seen the devastation that Harvey had in Texas and Houston. We saw what, Ida or Irma did in Florida. We saw what Jose did in Puerto Rico. And we have Carmarie that attends this church who has family down in Puerto Rico. And so for the last week or two, with all the satellites, all the cell phone towers out, and all, she had no idea if her family was all right. And so there was all that. And then today we find out that Nate has come ashore somewhere in Gulf Shores, Alabama. And so we've had all that going on and seen all the devastation, all these families who've lost everything before our eyes. We've been exhausted from what has been what we thought was the last 2 years of political campaigns, the elections, all the politics. No matter what side of the aisle you stand on or sit on, it has been exhausting. And what we found out is this isn't just a political year kind of thing. This is becoming a 24/7 news cycle kind of thing. It's no longer about, you know, what candidate you're wanting to be, the senator, house representative, whatever. It seems like it's constant political tension. For crying out loud, they can't even get along in their own parties, let alone deal with the other parties. And so you got all that going on. Then on top of that, you have the battle for immigration. You have all this stuff that's going on with, the Confederate statues and all the racial tension that's going on with Black Lives Matter, Blue Lives Matter, All Lives Matter. And it's just constantly people talking and arguing with each other. It is tough. We have our great universities that are bastions of freedom of speech and tolerance. And they're that way as long as they agree with the speech and they agree. And then all of a sudden now it's rioting going on and that stuff's happening. We found out 2 to 3 months after the fact that Equifax, someone who we give all of our private information to, had been basically, hacked into. We found that out 2 to 3 months after the fact. And then we got, by the way, North Korea, who doesn't like us. And then you get in line because there's quite a few countries that don't like us. Then 2 Sundays ago, in a place just like this in Tennessee, someone came in and shot some people at a church gathering. And then we wake up Monday morning to the news that the nation now has the new worst mass shooting in our nation's history. And what happened in Las Vegas. And that's just the news. Those are just the headlines. Those are the things we're seeing. And I haven't even started to touch on your personal losses that many of you have experienced and many of those in this church family right now are dealing with. I haven't touched on that. I haven't touched on your personal discouragement and the anguish that you're dealing with and the defeated, that you feel defeated or that you feel depressed. But then to add salt to the wound, I mean really add salt to the wound, there used to be things that we would go to escape reality. You know what I'm talking about? And for me, it was sports. Sports was something you'd go to escape the reality. But even sports has become extremely discouraging. And I'm not talking about discouraging as in wins and losses. We live in Cincinnati. We're used to the discouragement of losses, right? So I'm not talking about that. What I'm talking about is now when you go to watch sports, you have to decide, should I stand or should I not stand? Should I do this or should I do it? Should we visit the White House or should we not visit the White House? Should, you know, and then you're finding out all these basketball programs is dealing with FBI probes and investigations over shoe contracts and fraud and all that. I mean, this is sports. And yet now when you turn on ESPN Sports Center or anything like that, it seems like it's more of a CNN news show than it is reporting on the sports. That seems to be what's going on these days. And then just when you need to go turn on the TV because the TV will make you feel better, This Is Us is back. Yeah, This Is Us. That's some real good feel-good TV. If you watch This Is Us, you know you do not turn that show on until you have a box of Kleenexes sitting there with you. And if that's not a show that doesn't get you all giddy inside, Walking Dead's coming on in a couple more weeks. And that's a great feel-good show. I mean, zombies chasing you around, and really, they're not even the scary ones. It's the people that are the scary ones. And those are our so-called escapes from reality. You know, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it seems like even our comedies aren't funny anymore unless someone is the butt of the joke. They're either making fun of some inept parent, some inept preacher, or some inept politician, policeman, or someone certainly inept. And then our stand-up late-night comedians, it's like they aren't even into stand-up comedy as much anymore as they are stand up on a soapbox and lecture us. This is our so-called escape from reality. This is entertainment, folks. And so you wonder why it's difficult for me to get all excited about talking about encouraging one another when we all are living in such an environment that is filled with discouragement. Discouragement. Unless, of course, you go to Facebook or Instagram. I mean, those, now if you want joy, go to Facebook or Instagram, because everybody on Facebook is happy. The only problem with that is when they're posting stuff, you're seeing what it is, and usually it's, look where I am. Look what I'm doing. Look at who I'm with. And when you're looking at that stuff, you're like, I'm not there, I'm not doing that, I'm not with them, and I don't like you, you know? And so, you know, we only report the stuff that's good, the stuff that's happy. It's really not, it's not Facebook, it's fake book, really. I mean, it is, because we're faking it. It's really not as great as we like to make it seem. But if that doesn't make you mad or bother you that somebody's taking another great Instagram photo or someone's in another great luxurious location or something, if that doesn't bother you, just reading the news feed every day will bother you. Because of all the arguing, all the debating, all the polar divides back and forth and all that, that gets exhausting. But probably the greatest stress that many of you deal with when it comes to Facebook is, should I share that post with my 12 friends? Because you always get those posts where it says, share this with so many friends. You know, share it with 12 people. Don't copy and paste. Share it, or else. There's always an or else. There's ramifications. If you don't do this, you may miss out on a blessing. If you don't do this, you may find out you're not patriotic. If you don't share this, then you really don't love Jesus. Really. I mean, people who share this love Jesus. I mean, isn't it in the Bible? Isn't that there that, you know, that's the real proof of discipleship once and for all, is sharing these posts all across Facebook? I mean, wasn't it Jesus who said, if anyone wants to follow after me, don't copy and paste, but share this post to at least 12 other people, then come and follow me. Isn't that what Jesus said? Isn't it? But yet, when you're on Facebook or that, you know, there's even stuff like that. Do you get the sense, man, we are living in some really encouraging times, aren't we? It is so easy to think about encouraging one another. Now, I realize as I just kind of went through that, I'm hitting some broad stroke brushes and some generalizations. I realize even in this church, people are all over the map on all these issues, and I'm glad they are. I'm glad that we have a church that's filled with people who have different opinions on all kinds of political things, that because here's the thing, we are a messed up church, so I'm glad you're here because this might be the only time you can sit with someone you disagree with and not argue with them for an hour and 15 minutes. This might be the only place where you can sit next to somebody that you disagree with and actually be civil. You know, we live in a time where Max Lucado said in an article just this week, he called it, the land of the stars and stripes has become a country of stress and strife. The United States now is it's leading the league. We are now the best at being the most anxious in the entire world. He goes on to explain that with all this taking place nationally, internationally, and within our personal lives, that we're experiencing this thing called chronic anxiety. He goes on and describes it. It's a feeling of dread and edginess. And even when the storms abate, there is a sense that there's another one coming. Sunny days, they're just an interlude. You can't relax. All peace is temporary, short term. Anxiety is a thief, taking our sleep, our energy, our well-being, and our peace. And then he goes on to say, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, anxiety disorders are reaching epidemic proportions. In a given year, more than 50 million Americans will feel the effects of a panic attack, phobias, and other anxiety disorders. Now, why is that? Why are we the most anxious nation in the world? Well, he kind of goes on and describes some of the reasons for that, and it makes a lot of sense. Because we live in a society now that because of this, and because of our smartphones and our computers, now everything is accessible to us every second. I mean, every minute, every second, we see the changes. We see the threats. We see the catastrophic things happening. And we can get it right up to the second, right at the minute, because we all carry these things around. Whoop, this just popped up. Breaking news. And so what he says is because that's the case, you know, when you look at our grandparents or our great-grandparents and their generation, if an earthquake happened in Nepal on the other side of the world, they wouldn't find out about it for weeks, maybe even months. And by the time they did find out about it, Nepal had pretty much started to put the pieces back together. For our parents, for many of your parents in here, you got your news at really at one time. You better be there at 6 or you better be there at 6:30 to see the national news. Maybe then again at 11. But that's when you got your news. And even then, when you got your news, that's all you got. You just got news. They just reported the news. They didn't put a spin to it. They didn't have all kinds of commentary and editorials and opinion pieces. It was just the news. But we live in a time where all the time, every second of every minute of every hour of every day of every week, it's here. All the time. And we wonder why we're so anxious. We wonder why we are so anxious. Because every second, we are processing another crisis. Man, I hadn't had time to process that one. And now there's another one in New Mexico. And just when I'm starting to get used to it, did you hear what's going on in Tacoma, Washington? And now there's something going up in the Northeast. Every time we turn around, and what he says is it creates this exhaustion that comes within us, that's steeped with turmoil and chaos. And there, all of a sudden we have this lead, we start to, our compassion starts to sag because, quite honestly, it's like, I mean, how much more can I donate to the American Red Cross? I mean, it seems like every time I turn around, I'm donating to the American Red Cross or to Matthew 25 Ministries, whatever, and I'm exhausted. I don't have any more to give. Or maybe what it does to you is like, man, if this is as good as it's going to get, if this is reality now, if this is normalcy now, then it's just not good enough. And so we're discouraged. So this week, as you can tell, while the timing of this message is perfect, because we need to learn how to encourage one another, the timing is perfect. But boy, I'll tell you what, it has not been easy in trying to get up to preach on encouraging one another when there's so much discouragement. What we all need to do, though, is to give one another the courage to encourage the discouraged. We got to learn to inspire others that they would have the courage to encourage the discouraged. Now, the definition I'm working with on encourage basically means to inspire someone with courage, to give them courage, to motivate them, to prod them along, and to give them hope. And I think right now what we need, not only in this room and in our families and our community, what we need in this nation, what we need around the world, is a strong dose of courage and hope and inspiration. Someone said this, that discouragement is a temporary loss of perspective, usually incited by an emotionally difficult circumstance. Conversely, encouragement is a recapturing of proper perspective. When I saw that quote, I'm like, bingo, that's me. That is me. Is I have wrestled with this because what's going on in the world, what's going on in the nation, what's going on in this community, what's going on in this church, in the families of this church, it has caused me to lose perspective, brought on by all these emotional circumstances that are flying at us, and I've lost perspective. And what we have to do in order to be able to encourage one another and to be able to be encouraged ourselves is to recapture a proper perspective. Not something that's being done for you based on all the conditions and things flying at you. And so what I want to do is I want to look at the Word. I want to look at the Old Testament. I want to look at the New Testament. And I want you to kind of follow along. Now the first one we're going to look at is in the Old Testament. If you have your Bibles with you or if you have a Bible down there on the floor around you, if you have one of those, turn to page 730 or 731. Because we're going to a very small book in the Old Testament called Lamentations. Lamentations, it's followed right after the book of Jeremiah when he was known as the weeping prophet because he was always weeping and proclaiming all the stuff that was going to happen and he was crying and weeping. So a lot of people think and attribute him as being the author of Lamentations. But I want you to turn to Lamentations chapter 3 and you can get out your YouVersion app if you want to follow there. And if you got your Bible there in front of you, it's page 730 or 731. Or if you got your own, go to the table contents and you'll find it. But Lamentations chapter 3, verses 1 through 20. And let me set the background of what's going on here. Is the writer has just experienced and seen that basically their city of Jerusalem was destroyed. Done. Collapsed. And all of their people, all of the people were basically taken captive. Sold into slavery. And then that's what's going on here. And then what I did is I kind of pulled together a lot of different translations so that I could give you a paraphrase of what's happening here in Lamentations chapter 3. And here it is. It was bad. It was really bad. It says, I'm in darkness. There doesn't seem to be any light. I feel like God has turned his back on me or on us. Where is God? And why do bad things happen to good people? And even when I cry out to God, he doesn't seem to answer. Are you even there? I'm broken. I'm shattered. I'm weighed down with all this anxiety and stress. I'm depressed. I've been ridiculed. I've been mocked. I've been made fun of. I've been persecuted. And I can't find peace. I feel like the days of happiness are behind me. I long for the good old days when things were so much better. Now, is that in Lamentations or is that right now? Did I just describe right now or am I talking Lamentations? Well, I'm actually describing Lamentations. But it could very easily be described as right now. And yet what we find in verse 21, after all of this, woe is me and this is all the bad stuff that's happening and where are you, God? And you turn your back on. Then he gets to verse 21 and the author says, yet I call this to mind. And therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's faithful love, we do not perish, for his mercies never end. They are new every morning, and great is your faithfulness. I say the Lord is my portion, therefore I will put my hope in him. In other words, yes, things are terrible. Things are bad. Things are worse than they've ever been. Woe is me. It's miserable out there. But then I recall. Then it dawned on me. And then I remember. I remembered all that he did, and then I remembered that as bad as things are, I'm going to place my trust in him. I'm going to place my trust in him and my hope in him. That's the Old Testament version. Now let's look at the New Testament. Because in the Gospel of John, Jesus has the disciples up in the upper room, and he's telling them kind of his final words. Now they don't really realize it's his final words because they had no idea that he was getting ready to be sold out by Judas and arrested and beaten and eventually crucified. They didn't know that was coming. But Jesus did, so he's telling them all these things. He's like, you know, it's kind of like my last will and testament. I want you guys to listen up. So that's what's going on here. And in John 15, verses 18 through 20, it says this. If the world hates you, understand that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. However, because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of it, the world hates you. Remember the word I spoke to you. A servant is not greater than his master. If they persecuted me, then they will also persecute you. Matthew 24, verses 3 through 13. Again, the disciples approached Jesus privately and said, tell us, when will all these things happen? And what is the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And Jesus replied to them, watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, and they will deceive many. You're going to hear of wars and rumors of wars. And see that you are not alarmed, because these things must take place, but the end is not yet. For the nation will rise up against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines and earthquakes in various places. And all these events are the beginning of labor pains. And then they will hand you over to be persecuted, and they will kill you, and you'll be hated by all nations because of my name. And then many will fall away and betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will multiply, the love of many will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. You see, what he's basically saying there is we live in a messed up world. We live in a broken world that we broke. Our rebellion, our pride, our defiance, our sinfulness, we broke this world. And it's a world full of selfishness and despair. You can, you always say follow the money. A lot of times you look at the issues of this world, you don't have to follow the money, just follow it to someone. Because so much of it is on selfishness and greed and pride and ego and narcissism. And so what we see is that's the world we're in. We were promised it was going to happen. We were promised there was going to be suffering. In James chapter 1, he says there will be trials of many, many kinds. And some of you will say amen to that because you've been through a trial of many, many kinds. Our bodies break down. Our sciatic nerve out of the blue starts to bother you. All of a sudden, your best laid plans, they die. The things that you hope for, gone. Sin steals our joy. It kills and steals our joy. And when all that happens, our spirit begins to weaken. And our perspective begins to dim, and we end up getting discouraged. That's what happens. Lamentations demonstrated that. Jesus talks about that. But here's the thing. While that is the reality, that's the situation we're in, and that could be very discouraging. If that's all we dwelled on, it would be discouraging. But Jesus followed up every one of those things he said with a shot of encouragement. He encouraged them. If you look at John 16:33, after he said all that about, that you will be persecuted because I was persecuted, the world will hate you because they hated me, then he says in John 16, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. You will have suffering in this world, but be courageous because I have conquered it. In this godless world, the message says, you will continue to experience difficulties. Mark it down. It will happen, but take heart, because I've defeated this world. I've conquered it. Matthew 24, because lawlessness will multiply, the love of many will grow cold, but the one who endures to the end will be saved. 1 Peter 4, friends, when life gets really hard, difficult, don't jump to the conclusion that God isn't on the job. Instead, be glad that you are in the very thick of what Christ experienced. This is a spiritual refining process with glory just around the corner. Do you pick up on the encouragement? I mean, following the discouragement, following all that's going on, you will be hated, you will be persecuted, you will suffer, but be courageous, because I've conquered the world. There will be wars, there will be rumors of wars. Matter of fact, there will be such lawlessness that many people's love will grow cold. All these hate crimes, mass shootings, you can see it happening right now in our country and around the world. People's love is growing cold. We are in these lawless times where it's growing cold. But he says, hang in there. Hang in there, endure, and you will be saved. 1 Peter, when, not if, when life gets difficult. Don't assume that God's not paying attention or no longer in control. Instead, let's get a proper perspective here. Instead, rejoice as you share in the sufferings of Christ, so that you may also rejoice with great joy. when his glory is revealed. You see, he has overcome the world. He is greater than any trouble that we will face. And glory is right around the corner. That's what he says. That's what it says. And the problem is all these things that are happening causes us to get discouraged. And what we need is we need a proper perspective. We need a proper perspective. And so we need to look to God's word for encouragement. Here's a passage. It's a real short and simple one. And I'm going to break this down and then we'll be done. But Hebrews chapter 3 verse 13 says this. Encourage each other daily while it is still called today. Encourage one another daily right now. Right now while it's still called today. As we've been saying all along, life is not meant to be lived in isolation. If you try to go it alone, you are vulnerable to the enemy. It is not meant, God did not design it. The Trinity is not even designed in isolation. God did not want man to be alone. It's all about relationships. It's all about being one another. It's all about being together. That's what it's all about. And so we need to encourage one another. That is our greatest witness. Is when we are better together. And he says to do it daily. The frequency of when we encourage each other, not when you feel like it, not when you get around to it, not every once in a while, but daily. Daily. You encourage daily. And you don't have to look hard to find someone to encourage daily. You don't have to look hard to find stuff in this community or in your workplace or on your sports team or whatever to find someone or somehow to encourage someone daily. And then he says, while it is called today. The reason he says that is because there needs to be a sense of urgency. Because we're not guaranteed tomorrow. There has to be a sense of urgency while it is called today. Because we don't have tomorrow guaranteed. Opportunities may not be there tomorrow that are there right now. Right now. Situations change. People move. And so we need to find a way to encourage one another daily, like right now, while it is today, not tomorrow, because tomorrow never gets here. That's how important it is. And so make encouragement a daily discipline. And so maybe what you have to do, since you carry this thing around anyway, is get onto your little calendar, and sometime whenever you get up in the morning, whether it's 5:30, 6, 7, whatever, have a little reminder to pop up and say, find someone to encourage today. Just a daily reminder to find someone to encourage them. And you can text them, email them, or even call them. If you're under the age of 25 in here, let me just say real quick, here is a way to encourage your parents, is don't text them or Snapchat them. Actually, pick up the phone and call them. Now, let me just tell you, when you call them, at first they're going to think it's an emergency, or they're going to think you need money. But when you don't ask for those two things, and they realize you're just calling them to talk, they're shocked. But they also feel encouraged that you took the time to do that. So call them. Find ways to bring an encouraging word to every situation. Proverbs 16:24 says, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul, and healing to the bones. You know, I heard a story about an old man that lived in town, and he was one of those guys that could always make, you know, lemonade out of lemons. I mean, he was always positive, never said a bad thing about anyone or anything. He was just one of those that because he was so positive, everybody else in town hated him. They didn't like him. Because he was positive, they weren't. They wanted to get together and talk bad about people. They just wanted to continue to grumble and complain and all that. But he always was positive and encouraging. Well, apparently there was this mean, vicious dog that would terrorize everybody in this town. Just terrorize, you know, everybody. And so everybody hated that dog. Well, that vicious dog died. And so everybody in town is just like, oh, finally, they're talking bad about the dog, bad about the dog owners, all that stuff, and just grumbling, complaining. They're like, now we found something that we'll just see what he has to say about that dog. And so they go, they show up at this guy's house, and they say, what could you say about that dog, huh? He said, well, he sure did have pretty teeth, didn't he? Sure had pretty teeth. Here's the reality. For some people here, it's real easy for you to see the pretty teeth in a terrible situation. It just comes natural to you. Well, there are people that in my life that are just incredibly encouraging. I mean, all the time, they're up. They're just so encouraging. And I'll be honest, sometimes they're so encouraging early in the morning, it drives me crazy. What's wrong with you? You know? But there are people like that. They can find the pretty teeth in every situation. But for most of us here, man, we got to work at it. We got to work at being encouraged. And so by working at it, we got to practice it. We got to do it daily while we have today. The other thing is ask God to show you who needs to be encouraged. Ask him to show you who needs to be encouraged. All this week as we've been hearing about how the different responses through the situation in Las Vegas, one of the things that I found was interesting is I found an article because being a pastor, I was really concerned about how are the churches responding to this crisis? How are the Christ followers, the believers, responding? And I came across this article. And there's this church that decided they're just going to walk the Vegas Strip. They're just going to walk the boulevard, and they're just going to look for people to pray with. And they said that they were sure that there were going to be many people they were going to encounter. They were going to ask if they could pray with them or just talk with them or just whatever. And they knew they would encounter a lot of people that were not believers, but they were going to do it anyway. And so as they're doing this, they're going around. They said they're just looking for some, you know, someone to pray or someone to encourage. Well, Leah felt like there was this lady that was on a pedestrian bridge that God just highlighted her to her. It's like a spotlight or what, but she just noticed her. And so Leah goes up to this woman that she's never met before, and she starts talking with her. And she realizes that this woman has three adult children. One lives in Houston, one lives in Florida, and the third one lives in Puerto Rico. And in just the last 2 weeks, all of her three adult children have lost everything they owned. She then also found out that her husband had died 2 months before. And she was at the concert holding a little boy who she believes died. And so this is the person that this lady picks and goes and talks to her. And this woman, it says, she used to have faith, and I think it'd be almost understandable as to why she doesn't or why she's struggling. She's walked away, and she just wept and wept with Leah as Leah prayed for her and shared the gospel with her and prayed with her and spoke hope and did her best to encourage her in the worst of discouraging situations and to encourage her life. And this woman who was homeless and is now very hopeless said to Leah, "You know, I thought I was going to go get drunk after this, because there is no hope in my life anymore." And that's how the story ended. I'm like, did she? What did she do? What happened to that lady? I don't know the rest of the story. But what I do know is here's a lady who's walking the strip just looking for someone to encourage. And she said, "I felt like God was leading me to that woman. And when she went and actually had a conversation with that woman, I think we would all agree there couldn't have been a better person to be picked up that needed some encouragement." And so the question is, who will you see tomorrow or today that needs encouragement? And just ask God to show you who it is that you can encourage. And when it's obvious, when you feel compelled that this is the one, then respond. Respond. We also need to pray that God would create a culture of encouragement in this church. Now, I realize there are people that visit from other churches, and I realize that this there's a global Big C church, and that's all those who are followers of Jesus Christ around the globe. But I just want to talk about this church, the Crossing, the body of believers here. Is that I want us to continue to pray that we become a church that is known for our encouragement, that we create a culture of encouragement, that God makes this church a community where we band to one another, but we also love and encourage in specific and tangible ways. And I know that since we have come about in the last 6 years, we've continued to grow. And as we've grown, there's been many opportunities for you to find encouragement here. And there's been many opportunities for us to go there, out there, to encourage. For example, we have a men's ministry that's getting up and going and just had an archery shoot on the grounds and had a pancake breakfast. But every Saturday morning out here at 8 a.m. from 8 to about 9:15 out by the coffee area, they have just a time for men to get together. And so if you're a guy, then you have an opportunity for encouragement every Saturday from 8 to 9:15. We have women's ministry that has weekly Bible studies. They have a Wednesday night study, a Thursday morning study. And between them, I think there's like 70 to 80 women that are in the Word. But more than that, they're just encouraging one another, doing life together. We have a grief share group that's meeting up here every Monday night at 6:30. And I know there are people here grieving because I hear about it. I've experienced it. I've gone through it with you. And I know there are people in this family that are grieving. And I also know the holidays are coming, which only magnifies that grief even more. And if you're sitting out there and you're there, you are not alone. And we are providing an opportunity for you to get encouragement. So join. Go be a part of it at 6:30 on Monday nights. We have 11 community groups with over 185 people attending that we know of. And they aren't just a bunch of groups that get together and hold hands and sing Kumbaya and eat cookies and drink Kool-Aid. This is a group that they get together, they get into the Word, and then they break up at the men with the men, the ladies with the ladies, and they do life together, and they talk about what's going on in your life and how can I encourage you. But they don't just do that. Most of these groups then also find ways to go out and serve. Some work in concession stands together. Some hand out water at 5Ks. One group went down to Kentucky and did an overnighter and actually did mission work in helping to clean up a children's home. These groups are chances for you to get involved in a community, to not only encourage you, but to encourage one another, and through your group to be able to encourage others. We have that. We've been a Matthew 25 drop-off site. And you know that Matthew 25 is one of the most incredible ministries in this city, and we've become a drop-off site, and quite honestly, we also know that the last disaster didn't just happen. There will be more. And we got that nice barn out there, and so we want to continue to be involved in that. We have a lady, Kim Orleman, who came up to me. She attends another church down in Mount Washington. She came to me before we even moved into this building, like last spring, last part of winter, and said, hey, I want to start this ministry that just feeds people that need food, people that are hungry. So can we use your parking lot on Monday nights? I'm like, well, on Monday nights, it's really not our parking lot yet because Life Change is still meeting here. But yeah, go ahead. And so every Monday night, there's a group that meets up here around the corner when the weather's nice that feeds early on about 15. Now it's as many as 50 people are being fed in our parking lot through a ministry called Light Shine Ministry. That's not even our ministry. But we gave our asphalt to them. And so we have an opportunity for us to serve. And I'm sure if you wanted to go up there and help them out, they'd take you. We work with the Christian Help Center. We got this turkey crusade coming up here on November 18th on a Saturday where they give out frozen turkeys and all the trimmings and everything so people could take it home and prepare their own Thanksgiving meal. We've been doing that, partnering with the Help Center and other churches for as long as we've been a church. So we are working hard. We're trying to find ways to be an encouragement. But I want us to pray to continue to be so. Right now, I can tell you, our leadership, we got an opportunity to partner with a group called World Impact. And World Impact right now is planting urban core inner city ministries, inner city churches. And so these multi-ethnic groups, these multi-racial groups, they're planting these churches. And for $15,000, which is the equivalent of about one Sunday for us, for $15,000, you can help put this pastor through training and start a church. $15,000. And next year, they're doing Detroit, they're doing Atlanta and some other sites. And we have an opportunity to come alongside of them. And not only do we get to come alongside of them, but then after we get them up and running, then we can actually go down and roll up our sleeves and serve with them. Now, here's the thing. Most of us sit around all day long and type about what I want to do with racial reconciliation in this world. We want to do this, we want to do that. Well, we're not going to type about it. We have an opportunity to actually do something about it. And so we're praying about what we can do because we don't want to just write out a check. We want you all to be a part of that with us. You all help us fund it. So we can actually do something about it. We can talk about race relations all day long, but if we want to make a difference, then that's one way we can do it. Is let's plant a church. Let Jesus do some work. And so that's something. We talked about the dollar for a change bucket where everybody brings a dollar and puts it in a bucket, and then every month there's this, you know, if it's $600 a week, generates more. Then you nominate someone that you know of in this community or maybe that you're aware of that could use a blessing. And so based on the nomination, someone just gets blessed based on a dollar for a change. Those are things we're praying about, we're thinking about. We're always trying to find ways to encourage not only the people in this church, but this community. And it takes all of us. It takes all of us. You know, today, when you leave here, we have, I don't know how many we have here today, but normally we have about 500 to 600 adults and then some kids. So when you leave here today, God is going to place you in 500 different directions, 500 different centers of influence, families, workplaces, teams. And what could happen if all 500 of us decided today to find a way to encourage someone, pick up somebody's tab, tell them thank you? What would happen if we would do it today? And we would show some compassion without expecting any glory or any spotlight in return. No notches on our belt. We just do it because we have a very discouraged world out there that needs encouragement. What would happen if all 500 of us would actually go do something today? Can you imagine the subtle ripple effect? Because I hate to give it attention, but here's the reality. We already see the impact of what one hateful person could do to this country and to this world. One hateful person. Imagine what the impact would be if all of us who call ourselves followers of Jesus Christ would love and encourage daily. Can you imagine the impact if we would all do that? Because love wins. Love always defeats hate. Light will always penetrate the darkness. So we can all talk about this hateful act or these hateful acts, but we outnumber that if we would just do something. Every single one of us. Encourage someone daily while it is today. I have a friend that I'm in this pastor discipleship group, and I'll finish with this, and then we're going to pray. That basically, as we've shared in this group the last couple weeks we've been together, he works in this emergency response, and this is a national emergency response chaplaincy, and I don't want to go into the details of what he does. But the reality is, as soon as this happened Monday morning, I immediately thought of him. I thought, he's going to get the call. He's going to get the call because he's going to be called in to all the rapid response and dealing with all of the fallout, with all the families and all the tragedy. So I come to find out, I'm looking him up to text him and say, hey, I'm praying for you. He was actually in Vegas that weekend preaching at a church. And he and a couple of his pastors on his staff was actually in the Mandalay Bay lobby watching another band when the shooting took place. He was already there, already on the spot. And all this week, I've been praying for him, and we've been praying for him because we know that he has been in some just incredibly devastating, impactful situations. And I asked him this question. I said, how in the world can you bring encouragement to such a discouraging situation under these circumstances? And this is what he said. When darkness of evil shows up, the light always shines brighter. And we're seeing that being played out by the generosity, acts of selflessness, and kindness. And then he said, it's in all of us. It's just tragic that it takes something horrific like this to bring it out. It is in all of us. If you are a follower of Jesus Christ, the light of Christ is in all of us. It's just tragic that it takes something like this to bring it out. Well, Hebrews says, encourage one another daily, as in today. And so you be the change. You, right now, you be the change. Encourage one another right now. So I'm going to close today a little differently. I'm going to ask you to pray with me, and I want you to pray in your own words. There's no formula to it. I just want you and God to just be alone. And what we're going to do is we're going to put some things up here to pray about that you can pray specifically. And I'm going to give you time to pray for it specifically, and then we'll move on to the next thing. But I just want you, us corporately, in our own individual way, just you and God, just to pray. And the first thing is I want to pray for those who've been affected by the catastrophic events in Houston, Florida, Puerto Rico, now the Gulf Coast, Mexico City with the earthquake, the church in Tennessee and Las Vegas. And if you can think of others, just right now, spend time praying for those that have been affected in a devastating way. want you to pray for all the churches right now that are filled with believers, that they, that we will have a response of love and encouragement and hope that draws people not to us, but to Jesus Christ. Pray for those around you this morning that are in need of encouragement. Maybe you're aware of them specifically. Maybe you're aware of the person or the circumstances. If so, pray specifically for that person. Ask God to make you aware of who needs encouragement, to place somebody in your path, and that you will respond to them in a way that honors God and encourages the individual. Pray for this church. We will be a family that is an encouragement to this community, the community that God has placed us within and beyond. And finally, I'm sure if you're someone that came here who's in need of encouragement yourself, because you're extremely discouraged with what's going on, just recall the good things. Remember the good things that God has done. And give glory and thanks to Jesus. That while this world is filled with pain, suffering, and disappointment, that He is our hope, He is life, and He has conquered this world.
We're going to sing a song, and you guys can stand, you can sit, you can do whatever you want to do. But it's an old hymn. It's called "It Is Well With My Soul," and I wanted to share with you guys a little bit of the backstory. The man who wrote this hymn, his name was Horatio Spafford, and he wrote it after losing his entire family to a shipwreck when their ship sank, and he lost his wife and his children. And as he was later on was traveling basically the same route that they were traveling from England back to the United States. And about the approximate spot where their ship sank, he penned the words that we're fixing to sing. And I wanted to sing it as an encouragement to you guys that he recalled, he remembered, he trusted that in this world that we're going to have trouble, but that, like Scripture says, you can take heart because Christ has overcome the world. And that's why this song has been an encouragement to so many people. So I encourage you guys to be encouraged and to sing this with me.
When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, Thou hast taught me to say, it is well, it is well with my soul. It is trust you. We trust you. Your ways higher than our own. We trust you. We trust you. Your ways higher than our own.
Amen. I'm going to pray. Close us here, but before I do that, I want to, as I pray, I'm going to pray and ask God to bless the offering that we give here. If you notice, we don't pass the basket or anything. That's because we've got boxes at the doors. If you've come prepared to give and God feel like God's leading you to do that, you can put them in there. You can put your gifts in there. You can also give online at our website, comethecrossing.com/give. Or if you can do like I do, I've got an app on our phone, or my phone. If you go to the App Store, or in Google Play, and you can search The Crossing Church -OH. You can find our app, and you can give that way, too. So three different ways you can do that here at The Crossing. And so if you've come prepared to give, you can do that. And I'm going to pray, ask God to bless those tithes and those offerings and to thank him for meeting with us here, and then you guys are dismissed. So let's do that.